From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Today, America is remembering the life and legacy of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., who led a movement to recognize human rights that changed our country and our world. A little later, we'll revisit our conversation with Illinoisan Don Rose, who was King's press secretary in 1966 during his Chicago Freedom Campaign. But we start today with the topic of reparations, specifically to African Americans. Enslaved Africans and their descendants helped build the U.S. with bloody and deadly forced labor from 1619 until 1865. Despite the value of that labor running into the trillions of dollars, Black Americans remained far behind their white neighbors in median income and other economic measures. Black and white Americans are also far apart on the question of whether the descendants of enslaved people ought to be compensated for their ancestors' work building up our country. Tonight, the Independent Lens documentary series on PBS premieres The Big Payback, Fear and Reparations in the American Suburb. The film includes the city of Evanston, Illinois, which in 2021 began directing money from the city's tax on recreational marijuana to offer to Black residents to help pay for property or home repairs. Here's Alderwoman Robin Rue Simmons in a clip from the film.
I realize that now I'm a part of a movement, a national movement, one that has great momentum to finally grapple with the injury inflicted by slavery and the deep-seated racism that we endure today.
We're here to represent and advocate for HR 40, ladies. We're here for HR 40. We're all here for the things that empower our community. Just want to make sure you have this slide.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for being
here. Good luck to you today.
Thank you.
Simmons is one of many advocates for a congressional study on reparations. The idea was first introduced back in 1989, but it's never made it to a full vote. You can watch The Big Payback tonight on PBS. For now, we're joined by the film's co-directors, who also co-hosted a podcast of the same name. Erica Alexander is making her directorial debut. She co-founded the entertainment company Color Farm Media. You might also know her from back in the day when she was on the TV series Living Single and The Cosby Show. Also with us is Whitney Dow. He's directed several award-winning documentaries on race and identity that have aired as part of Independent Lens. Erica, Whitney, welcome. Thanks for making the time to be with us.
Thank you for having
us. Thank you.
Listeners, you should know we recorded today's program ahead of time. Because of that, we're not taking calls live, but you can always let us know what you thought by sending an email to talk@21stshow.org or leave us a voicemail anytime, day or night. 217-300-2121 is the number. So I want to begin. Having produced this documentary and the podcast, what is the monetary value experts believe is equal to the amount of labor produced by enslaved people from 1619 to the Emancipation Proclamation?
Well, that, I mean, there's a lot of different people. There's a lot of different numbers that have been applied to that. And Professor Sandy Darity has done a lot of work on that. I think the estimates range up depending on actually how you value that. How do you say, is it a GDP? Is it number of hours worked? How do you actually do it? But there's a number of equations. But the number that people talk about is up to $16
trillion. $16 trillion. Wow. In addition, it's not just that time period, right? Because some conceptions of reparations would also include the Jim Crow era after the Civil War and Reconstruction. Can you say more about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a little harder to quantify, and that's actually one of the things that we got into with this film, is trying to understand how things that aren't actually slave, you know, that actually weren't like slave labor or actually extracted value. It's more about, in this particular case in Evanston, Illinois, it's about how Black Americans were kept out of building wealth and having and generating generational wealth, generating income, because of not just laws that are embedded in particular city charter or anything, but actually because of like civic structures that kept them from being full participants in their community and the business life of their community. And in this case, in our film, it was built, the first reparations in Evanston was built around this idea of redlining and Black Americans being excluded from fully participating in building wealth through real estate.
Yeah, certainly a lot of communities in Illinois have a long, terrible history of redlining. Within the context of what we've been talking about, Eric, I wonder, how does the absence of reparations manifest in Black communities today?
Well, it's around everyone, and it's inside the fabric of America. It's actually, people think that race and reparations and, race and discrimination is out of people's mouths, mostly what they say, their words, the use of the N word, but that's nothing actually compared to banking laws, education, real estate, the things that they're dealing with in Evanston, the historical nature of it being so embedded that people refuse to see it and acknowledge it, and it just keeps acting upon people. We hear all the time about institutions who are being found out to deny people based on their race or their location. But if you're in that location because historically you've been shoved into a certain location and rounded up, it's very difficult for Black people to have the conversation about where you're discriminating against me because I live in this area, but all your algorithms and the things that you place upon this area are discriminatory inside in that practice as well. So there's a lot of, I call them invisible, but they're very much, they're like a web, and we have to root them out because they've been placed there a long time, and they're also inside of people's heads, how we look at who should work, the essential worker conversation in 2020. We saw very quickly who run Bartertown. It wasn't the people in the high skyscrapers. It were the people who are in the streets cleaning and making the cities run, truckers, drivers, nurses, all these people. And over years and years and years, there's a certain color in face of those people because of discrimination and prejudice, but also because of slavery and its vestiges.
Whitney, there's a Pew Research Center survey from late 2021 that has some striking differences in how Americans view reparations. 77% of the Black respondents said the descendants of people who were enslaved in the U.S. should be repaid in some ways. But that number was just 18% among white Americans in the poll. You spoke with people in the documentary who oppose the effort in Evanston. Why do you think that rift is so wide?
Well, I mean, what's interesting is that it's not just white people that oppose reparations. You saw, if you watched the documentary, some of the Black residents also opposed it, but for reasons that are outlined in the film. But you know, I think that it's more of an existential question for white people. It's almost that if they acknowledge this debt that they owe, they have to acknowledge something about themselves. And there's this idea that if you acknowledge that we owe a debt to Black Americans, that you actually have some sort of moral failing, or you have some sort of guilt to bring along to it. And I think that this idea is also sort of always built around like responsibility. Why am I responsible for the sins of the past? And I think a more important question is like, what are your responsibilities to the problems of the present? And so it is very striking and very depressing that the numbers are the way they are. And I think one of the things interesting about the story we tell is that you have to understand that Evanston is predominantly white. I think that it's about 16% African American, which is a little higher than the national average, but kind of close to national average. Yet it was overwhelmingly supported in this community, and I think it was overwhelmingly supported in this community because there wasn't this direct connection. It wasn't like we're in New Orleans where there were slave markets. It's actually the community sort of felt at this remove from slavery where they could actually look at the structures of their city and how they impacted their Black residents without feeling that somehow they carried guilt for the crimes of slavery. But you know, I also think, when was that Pew study come out? Was that recent?
I think it was last year, or 2021, I should say. Now we're into 2023, but yeah.
Again, that's really surprising. I was wondering that if the events of 2020, you know, the death of George Floyd and sort of what a lot of people term, sort of this great awakening of white people sort of seeing Black Americans and so the situation they're in differently had moved the needle. I guess that it actually didn't move it. It's a little depressing to hear that the numbers are still so low after that.
Yeah. Well, Evanston's based on my knowledge of Illinois politics, I think it's a pretty blue city as they go. You could probably find some other Chicago suburbs not too far from Evanston where that would be closer to that national poll result. You know, I'm glad you mentioned that it's not just white people who are opposed to that, because you spoke to a Black business owner, Hecky Powell, who said the community doesn't need reparations. Well, say more about that conversation.
Erica, do you want to speak to this and sort of why the resistance in, Hecky, it was a really interesting character. And one of the big disappointments that I think we both had with this is that interview with Hecky was very early on in the process. And his resistance was his sort of, had this very clear position of my parents, lived under this, and they pulled themselves up by their bootstraps, and they built this business. I worked hard and I built this business. Nobody gave me any handouts. It's sort of this idea. He was a really self-actualized person. And people who are listening to this, who, live in Illinois, a lot of them probably know who Hecky Powell was. He sort of was this big figure in Evanston, but also a big figure in Illinois. And what was also interesting about him is that he wasn't sort of this reactionary. He actually had a whole foundation that provided jobs to his kids who didn't want to go to college, wanted to learn a trade, and provided mentorship. And he really sort of walked the walk of building your own path, building your own path through life. But I really wonder, we spoke to him right in the very beginning of 2020, and literally within 3 weeks after speaking to him, he contracted COVID and he died. And I wonder, this process in Evanston went on for a couple more years before the initial payment was paid out, is that he was a very, very smart man and a very thoughtful man. And I wonder if he might have changed his mind if he could have seen it unfolded and how it actually had impacted the community.
Yeah, it's one thing to be a concept, another thing to actually have a piece of legislation or ordinance to weigh in on. Let me just take a moment to remind listeners, it's the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about the documentary, The Big Payback, which will be airing on PBS this Monday evening as part of the Independent Lens series. We're speaking with co-directors Whitney Dow and Erica Alexander. And, this idea of reparations is not new. The U.S. government paid $37 million to Japanese Americans after the internment camps of World War II. In 1948, an Indian Claims Commission began paying compensation to federally recognized tribes for lands that had been seized by the U.S. The late Congressman John Conyers of Michigan first introduced the idea of a study on reparations to Black Americans more than 30 years ago. It didn't really advance until 2021, still has not gotten a vote on the full House of Representatives. For this film, you talk with Texas Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee. Erica, can you talk about what has changed? Why is Congress now looking at this more actively, or at least until the new Congress was sworn in?
They're not looking at it more actively. I think that it's been 30 years since John Conyers introduced it and Sheila Jackson Lee took it up, and they got it a little further on a vote. And then the Congress changes, and the next thing you know, we've got a Congress full of Republicans who were against it when she got there and when Conyers tried to do it. They're looking for an executive order now, though. That's what they're looking at. They've asked now officially for President Biden to sign an executive order, which is within his power to do. And they've been working on this conversation for a long time. And I'm glad you mentioned the historical context of it, because you think about the several decades since Reconstruction, you got the OGs, you got the visionaries, you got Callie House, Queen Mother Moore, James Forman, who is in our podcast. We talk about him interrupting a church service to say that the church owed reparations to Black people. We have people working on it now from NCOBRA. John Conyers introduced the legislation, and we got Sheila Jackson Lee, and then came Alderwoman Robin Rue Simmons, and she's a new leader, and there are new leaders all over America trying to take this up locally. But one of the reasons why they're doing it locally is because it's so difficult in Congress and we don't have the will, we don't have the representatives to do it, but we do have the way. Way is an executive order from President Biden, and he should see to it.
We're going to have to take a break. We're going to continue our conversation about the new documentary premiering this Monday evening on PBS as part of the Independent Lens series. It's called The Big Payback, Fear and Reparations in the American Suburb. We're speaking with the co-directors of that film, Erica Alexander and Whitney Dow. We're not taking calls because we recorded this conversation ahead of time, but you can always let us know what you thought by emailing talk@21stshow.org, talk@21stshow.org, or leave us a voicemail anytime, 217-300-2121. More to come after a short break. This is The 21st Show. Stay with us. It's The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with the co-directors of a new documentary film. It's called The Big Payback, Fear and Reparations in the American Suburb. It premieres this evening on PBS as part of the series Independent Lens. We're speaking with the co-directors of that film, Erica Alexander and Whitney Dow. And I want to ask about a little bit more about the process of making the film. Erica, you're a Black woman. Whitney, you're a white man, two different backgrounds, different lived experiences. Can you both talk a little bit about how those experiences shaped your work together on this film?
Sure. It was our friend Joy Reid who introduced us and thought we should do this work together because we had both expressed interest in doing a documentary in this space. And it was a good idea because this is a conversation that, you know, just visually, graphically, is told in black and white. And so we thought that we should come together, and we have very different backgrounds. But I always say that my skin drew me into the story, and I'm not so much as inspired as compelled to tackle these hard things as a black woman born in America. And this story, reparations for African-American descendants of slaves, is a Molotov cocktail. You throw that in the mix and everybody gets hot in some way. It's all about the Benjamins. It's about slavery. It's about race, prejudice. It's about justice. And that drew me in. It's a complicated, complex thing, but we're also looking at restitution morally. The debt, the fabric, the debt that resides in America's fabric is a moral debt. And I have always said that America cannot be the America that it dreamed or was written to be and people dream about unless it deals with this. It will be pulled down and destroyed, as James Baldwin says, it'll be wrecked by it because it hasn't given it to all its citizens, but it also hasn't addressed and given restitution and reparation and apology without conditions to the Africans who built it and who have been terrorized and unjustly targeted in the building of the skyscrapers and all the wealth and the beauty that's in America is built on bodies and blood. It needs to deal with that.
Whitney, what about you? What drew you to this work?
Well, you know, I've been, as you said at the top thing, I've been doing films about you know, race and difference and the division between Black white Americans for a couple of decades now. And everything sort of, every person I've talked to, every story I've covered leads to the conversation about reparations. I feel as a white person, I think many people think about reparations as being something for Black people, but I really believe that reparations is also for white people. I think that one of the things that you're talking about, you talked about that Pew study earlier, one of the big resistance is that white people sort of are grappling with this sort of cognitive dissonance about believing that they live this, that they have this sort of role or force in the world that's a force for good, that we've sort of, as sort of thinking about sort of the American narrative, how we sort of see ourselves. And it's incredibly disorienting, I think, to know that you're carrying something that is false. And I really believe that if there is an honest move towards reparations, that will help white people, because I feel like they're really carrying this load of guilt. When you know you've done something wrong, we never want to admit when we're in the wrong. We never want to admit it, whatever it is, whether it's a fight with a friend or a family member. But you actually, when you know you're carrying something wrong, it makes you unhappy. And I really believe that this idea of moving towards reparations and repairing this injury will not just help Black Americans flourish, but will also help white Americans flourish.
You know, in the time since the program that we've been talking about in Evanston was announced, and I think it was, what, $10 million over 10 years, beginning through these $400,000 grants for housing. There was a Washington Post article recently that noted that Evanston has not spent beyond that program. Five people have died waiting for their share. Many more are on a waiting list. Do you think, Whitney, that Evanston's plans can or will live up to their original promise?
Well, here's the thing about it, is that what does that mean, live up to their promise? I think they've already lived up to their promise because they happened. And this is something that's really clear in the movie, is that what Robin did, whatever you think about the program, and there's a big debate to be had about what the value of the program is in the context of reparations. But in our minds, in my mind, what I think is that what everybody said, she showed that the impossible was possible. A community could come together, examine its past and its relationship to its Black community, and take a step forward to actually earmark money and disperse it to people. Now, it is an incredibly complex process. As you saw, as people can see in the film, just making a project that's legally defensible, because people are going to come after any program where you start distributing tax money, especially to Black Americans, that to make it actually like a functional program is really, really, really complicated. And there are absolutely going to be some bumps along the way. There's some valid criticism of what the program is. And I think that the Reparations Committee in Evanston is trying to address it. But I also think one of the big steps that have happened since then, you said that it's $10 million and only $400,000 has been distributed. That's the first step in this idea of dealing with real estate. They're looking at other pieces of programs. But the really significant thing that's happened since then was that the city has passed an additional $10 million that's tied to property tax. Now, the first money was tied to this sin tax of legal marijuana. I think it's a huge step for the community to say, we're not just going to take a new sin tax, we're actually going to take a tax. Everybody in the community is agreeing to pay a portion into this because we think it's important for our community to heal. So I think that this is a revolutionary step that hasn't happened before. I think that everybody should sit back and watch and see how it develops. I think this story, we're at the beginning of this story, not the end of the story.
We're almost out of time in our conversation. Erica Alexander, I think I want to ask the last question to you, which is that there are people who say that some of these programs that, I think it was in that same Washington Post article, there was somebody who quoted who said, another former older woman from Evanston, Cicely Fleming, who said that, you know, people are starting to call any policy that might benefit Black people reparations. I guess in one city they were even doing like road repairs and calling it reparations, which really that's just good government. What do you think about that? Is what's happening in Evanston truly reparations?
Well, it's funny you should say, Brian, they were calling Obama reparations for Black people. I was calling him president, the 44th president, but they were calling him reparations. Can you imagine how absurd that was? I think that we need to educate ourselves about what reparation truly is. And it's not fair that any time something is corrected inside of America that just should Black people should automatically have, we say that's a reparation. It's not. Reparations is very specific to a harm that has been done specifically to Black people. And then again, the follow-up after it, that was years and years of terrorism. But here's what I say to what's happening right now. Reverend Barber calls this the third Reconstruction. And that means it's the time to rebuild America's foundation as it should have been built since Reconstruction. And he knows we can't possibly do it without looking at the moral and monetary obligations toward the least of these. But we're also talking specifically about African Americans and the harm and evil that was unduly forced on them and their bodies and their generational money that they could earn, and also their people that are owed to them. But we're not even being able to talk about the psychological harm, the physical harm, and all the ugly things that happened, because they could never give us enough money for that. But the fact that we're having these conversations and that we're trying to figure it out and people are putting forth programs is progress. And we should be hopeful that in the end of this process, we will get to something that looks like something that's more American and that can say, can stand up and deliver for the African Americans that helped build this country.
Erica Alexander and Whitney Dow are co-directors of The Big Payback, Fear and Reparations in the American Suburb. You can watch it tonight, Monday evening, on the PBS series Independent Lens. Thank you so much for being with us today on The 21st Show.
Thank you. Such a pleasure.
As we finish this conversation, I also want to note, back in March 2021, we spoke with Robin Rue Simmons and others involved in the Evanston effort. We'll have a link to that with this story on our website, 21stshow.org.